Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, May 13, 2021. Coming up this hour,
the largest U.S. gasoline pipeline returns to service.
The White House pushes for an end to clashes between Israel and Gaza.
Traders await another key inflation report after yesterday's surprise print.
And Bitcoin slides after Tesla suspends purchases using the digital currency.
The suspect in last weekend's shooting in Times Square has been arrested. Plus, former Minneapolis police officer Chauvin faces a tougher prison sentence. I'm Mike DeVar. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Nets beat the Spurs. The Yankees shut out the Rays. And the Mets won their seventh in a row.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by SEI. Imagine your asset management firm's operational infrastructure as a competitive advantage. Let SEI show you how at seic.com/IMS.
And U.S. futures are falling this morning, adding to yesterday's losses. 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 17 points, Dow futures down 208, NASDAQ futures down 44. Nathan.
Karen, oil and gas are falling as well this morning. That's after news that the largest U.S. gasoline pipeline is returning to service. Let's get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Colonial Pipeline resumed fuel shipments around 5 p.m. Eastern Time. It's recovering from a cyber attack that happened about a week ago, triggering shortages across the East Coast. And in a further effort to provide relief, the Biden administration temporarily waived century-old shipping restrictions to allow foreign tankers to transport fuel to areas with shortages. Now, it's unclear how long it'll take for supplies to come back to normal, but it could take up to a week for foreign flag tankers to fill the supply gap. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Another major story we are following is the escalating violence in the Middle East. In just 3 days, fighting between Israel and the Palestinians has already begun to resemble or exceed a devastating 50-day war in 2014. President Biden spoke to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about the conflict.
Israel has a right to defend itself when you have thousands of rockets flying into your territory. But I had a conversation for a while with the Prime Minister of Israel, and my hope is that we'll see this coming to conclusion sooner than later.
So far, more than 60 Palestinians have been reported killed in Gaza and at least 6 dead in Israel.
When it comes to domestic policy, President Biden and Republican leaders are talking infrastructure spending. The two sides see a narrow path toward compromise, but there's one big sticking point. Amy Morris reports from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Republicans want a limited definition of infrastructure and will not budge over tax increases to pay for it. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy.
Let's first decide what is the definition of infrastructure. If we can all decide that, then we can work on what the need is and what we need to spend.
He and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell will not revisit the Trump-era 2017 tax cuts, ruling out the Biden proposal to raise the corporate rate from 21%. But McCarthy also called talks with President Biden, quote, very strong, and says there is a place for bipartisanship. The timing is crucial. The White House has said it wants to see Congress move legislation by Memorial Day. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Amy, thank you. We now turn to the latest on the pandemic. The CDC is opening a new phase in the U.S. immunization effort, saying children 12 to 15 can safely take the coronavirus vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech. President Biden says it's imperative for all Americans to get vaccinated.
We're now on track to 60% of adults with at least one shot by next week. We still have a lot of work to do to get the adult vaccination rate to 70%. But I believe we're going to get there.
Well, getting a shot could make you a millionaire if you live in Ohio. In an effort to boost vaccine numbers in that state, it's giving $1 million cash prizes to 5 randomly selected residents who get their shot by May 26th. So far, 42% of Ohio has been vaccinated.
Turning to the economy now, Wall Street is bracing for another round of inflation data with today's producer price index for April. And let's get more from Bloomberg Economics correspondent Michael McKee.
The big jump in consumer prices has markets on inflation watch, although producer prices don't often feed directly into the inflation pipeline. We know prices are climbing due to supply chain disruptions, particularly for commodities. One thing to watch, the difference between PPI for intermediate goods, those used to make others, and final goods. Are companies absorbing higher costs or passing them along? Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Mike, thank you. Economists predict today's producer price index will show a 0.3% increase for April, and Bloomberg customers can get more on the estimates at EcoGo on the terminal.
The PPI report comes a day after consumer prices climbed by the most in nearly 12 years. The Federal Reserve is watching inflation closely, but Vice Chair Richard Clarida is playing down the significance, once again calling it transitory.
Readings on inflation on a year-over-year basis have recently increased and are likely to rise somewhat further before moderating later this year. Under my baseline, I expect inflation to return to, or perhaps run somewhat above, our 2% longer-run goal in 2022 and 2023.
Vice Chair Clarida made the comments yesterday before the National Association for Business Economics.
We're seeing Bitcoin drop this morning. That's after Tesla suspended vehicle purchases using the cryptocurrency. We get more from Bloomberg's Doug Krisner.
CEO Elon Musk said Tesla is concerned about rapidly increasing use of fossil fuels for energy and Bitcoin mining. That's especially true where coal is concerned. Musk said cryptocurrency is a good idea on many levels, and Tesla believes it has a promising future, but it cannot come at great cost to the environment. Musk said Tesla will not be selling any Bitcoin. The company intends to use it for transactions as soon as mining transitions to more sustainable energy. Tesla is looking at other cryptos that use less than 1% of Bitcoin's energy per transaction. I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Doug, thank you. Checking Bitcoin now, it's down more than 7.5% at $50,299. Other digital currencies are also falling this morning. Terminal users can see all the moves on our Bloomberg cryptocurrency monitor at CRYP Go. Futures also lower this morning. S&P futures down 15 points. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
At 5:07 on Wall Street, we bring in Michael Barr for a look at what's going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Police say the man who opened fire in Times Square last weekend, wounding bystanders, has been arrested. Authorities say Farrakhan Mohammed was arrested by federal marshals at a McDonald's in Stark, Florida, near Jacksonville. NYPD Chief of Detectives James Essig credits investigative work and Crime Stoppers tips.
Thousands of hours of video canvassing to be viewed, witnesses to be interviewed. The eyes of the world were on them. They were watching. And here we are, 4 days later, with an apprehension.
Essex says the suspect's brother was the intended target when Muhammad allegedly opened fire on the street, injuring two women and a four-year-old girl. Muhammad will face charges upon his return to New York City. An arrest has been made after an Asian woman was attacked in the head with a hammer earlier this month near Times Square. The NYPD says a 37-year-old homeless woman was arrested on charges, including assault and criminal possession of a weapon. Authorities say the victim did not know her assailant, and the suspect, Ebony Jackson, told her to take off her mask before striking her with a hammer. The House Homeland Security Committee is taking a closer look at the January 6th siege on the Capitol. Ranking Member John Katko of New York wants to know how things escalated so quickly.
92% of the Capitol police officers do not have faith in the leadership of the Capitol Hill Police. And there's a lot of security failures that happened that day that allowed this to happen.
Congressman Katko spoke to ABC. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin could receive a prison sentence longer than recommended by state guidelines for the killing of George Floyd. Hennepin County District Judge Peter Cahill cited facts supporting an aggravated durational departure from the guidelines, clearing the way for him to exceed them. A jury April 20th convicted Chauvin of second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and manslaughter in the death of Floyd. Attorney General Merrick Garland told senators that the horror of domestic violent extremism is still with us.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat we face comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocate for the superiority of the white race.
Garland added domestic violent extremists pose an elevated threat in 2021. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 5:10 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashower.
Thanks, Nathan. Garrett Cole continues to be money well spent. Last night in Tampa Bay, may have been his best Yankee outing. 8 innings, no runs, 4 hits, 12 strikeouts, no walks. Cole hasn't walked a batter in a month. Yanks got a run in the 7th inning. They beat the Rays 1-0. They've won 9 of the last 11. The Red Sox lost. The Yanks are only one game behind. Meanwhile, Yanks dealing with a COVID outbreak. Only one player has been affected, and Gleyber Torres didn't play only as a precaution. But 3 coaches and 4 staff members have tested positive, even though they were fully vaccinated. Aaron Boone is a manager, not a doctor.
Some of these cases, it's probably been, you know, a false positive along the way, or maybe somebody with antibodies, a certain shedding that goes on that can show up in a given test. Again, a little above my pay grade, and I don't quite understand it all that well.
That's Aaron Boone. That's won their 7th in a row, 7-1 over Baltimore as they got to their old friend Matt Harvey, who was making his first start at Citi Field since he left the Mets 3 years ago. Dom Smith had 3 hits, and Taijuan Walker continues to pitch well, not only 4 hits in 7 innings. In Brooklyn, welcome back James Harden. His first game since early April helped the Nets beat San Antonio 128-116. The Spurs stay in New York, visit the Knicks tonight. The Rangers have fired coach David Quinn after 3 years on the job. The big news out of the release of the NFL schedule is that Tom Brady will face his old team October 3rd, Tampa Bay at New England. But in week 1, it's Sam Darnold facing his old team as the Jets visit Carolina. The Giants season opener will be at home versus Denver. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. Red across the board as we check our Bloomberg terminal screens this morning. S&P futures down 14 points. Dow futures down 183. NASDAQ futures lower by 42 points. Little change to the 10-year Treasury. The yield is at 1.69%. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly to mostly sunny, upper 60s today. Mix of sun and clouds tomorrow, low 70s. Start the weekend with sunshine, some afternoon clouds, and low 70s. Currently 53 in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks are falling to a 6-week low and U.S. stock index futures retreating as inflation fears continue to depress investors. Sentiment, oil declining as the largest U.S. gas pipeline resumes service, and Bitcoin dropping toward $50,000 as Tesla suspends purchases using the cryptocurrency. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 21 points, Dow futures down 238, NASDAQ futures down 57. The DAX in Germany is down 1.7%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 1.69%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.5% on $1.70 at $64.39 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.5% or $9.40 at $18.13.40 an ounce. The euro, 1.2065 against the dollar. British pound, 1.4028. The yen, 109.56. And Bitcoin at $50,180. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Colonial Pipeline says its system is back online and it has begun the process of getting things back up and running. The developments come nearly a week after a ransomware attack. With half of the East Coast's fuel supply knocked offline, gas prices have been soaring. President Joe Biden spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu amid a surge of Israeli-Palestinian violence. Biden says Israel has the right to defend itself from attacks. More than 60 Palestinians have been reported killed in Gaza and at least 6 people in Israel. In Major League Baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets down the Orioles 7-1. The A's beat the Red Sox 4-1. The Nationals lost. In the NBA, the Nets won. The Wizards lost. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's get more now on our topic. top story, Colonial Pipeline coming back online. As Michael mentioned, prices have been soaring since the cyber attack last Friday. But now, as we watch crude and gasoline futures this morning, they're falling back to earth. Let's bring in Bloomberg News oil trading reporter Alex Longley. Alex, good morning. Colonial says it resumed operations 5 p.m. Eastern time yesterday. But as Michael alluded to, that really is just the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think RVC's Mike Tram probably puts this best. He says it's the beginning of the end and not the end. The restart to the pipeline obviously is good news for sort of a return to normalization of fuel flows from refining hubs in the south towards the northeastern U.S. But there's still a long way to go. The standard transit time before this attack was about 14 days for gasoline from all the way from the south to the north. So clearly it's going to take time for fuel supplies to replenish, but it's also better news than no news, right? The pipeline is starting to get going again, and that's good news for consumers.
Well, given the amount of time it's going to take for gasoline to get back to retail stations, are we expecting more volatility in fuel prices in the days to come?
Well, I think you can probably expect that to continue. There are a few mitigating factors. Overnight, the Biden administration issued its first waiver for the Jones Act, so that's kind of allowing extra ships to move fuels from the south to the north. Again, that's going to take 6 to 7 days, so shortages aren't going to sort of clear up overnight. That said, plenty of steps have been taken. The EPA has issued some waivers as well. So you are going to see supplies start to return to gas stations. But I think there's kind of there's room to run yet in terms of volatility, and particularly at retail prices at the pump. We saw nationwide prices top $3 a gallon for the first time since 2014 on Tuesday. And that tells you a lot about the direction of travel, I think.
Yeah, not only have we seen the supply disruption have that impact on price, but also a lot of gasoline consumers in this country hoarding gas. We've seen a lot of pictures of people with dozens of gallon fuel tanks in their trunks pumping gas and hoarding it. How much of an impact did that have on price?
Clearly, it's been exacerbating it. At times of disruption like this, the best thing to do is to only take what you need. There are obviously other parts of the U.S. where there's been occasional hoarding as well that aren't even on the pipeline and aren't even affected by these shortages. So that has made things worse. I think the message from both the operators and the administration is that things are going to slowly start returning to normal, to take what you need, and then you will see sort of a return to normal service at gas stations and the pump in the coming days.
And of course, the overriding issue is this vulnerability that has been exposed here of cyber risk in the oil market. I mean, there's already geopolitical risk priced into this space. Is this something that traders need to think about longer term and more holistically, the idea that cyber risk is part of what they should be pricing in?
Yeah, I mean, it's a step change for the market as well, right? I mean, when I first started covering the oil market, the sort of the political risk that people looked for were kind of Middle East tensions and disruption over there. Cyber attacks are clearly a new element for the market, and this has shown in the biggest fuel market in the world, really, how they can have such a meaningful impact. The Colonial Pipeline isn't the only pipeline in the U.S. or in the Western world. Europe's fuel network and crude network runs on a whole network, on a whole host of pipelines as well. So clearly, cybersecurity is going to be a massive issue in the coming years, and is vying with kind of the traditional geopolitical risk that we're used to acknowledging in the oil market.
So in our last 30 seconds here, Alex, the traders that you're talking to, what are they telling you in terms of when they expect sort of a return to stabilization in gasoline?
I think slowly but surely. There's I know we've spoken about the restart, but there's a lot of unknown still, and it's going to be a case of how quickly and how much fuel starts moving along the pipeline today. And don't forget, it's not just gasoline that the Colonial Pipeline carries. So there's questions about whether Colonial are going to wait towards transporting more gasoline to the northeast over other fuels. And I think in the next 24 hours, we'll have a better sense of exactly how long the disruption is going to carry on for.
Thanks for this, Alex. Great having you back on with us this morning. Alex Longley is oil trading reporter for Bloomberg News. And as the Colonial Pipeline is restored, we are seeing a drop in commodity prices. Gasoline and crude futures are down more than 2% across the board, and the Bloomberg Commodities Index is down 1.4%. Bloomberg customers can see more at BCOM Go on the Bloomberg Terminal. Futures in the red as well. For equity futures, this is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, partly to mostly sunny, upper 60s today. We'll end the week in the low 70s under a mix of sun and clouds. Same deal as we start the weekend Saturday, currently 53 in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Oil and gas prices are easing as the largest U.S. gasoline pipeline returns to service. We get the latest live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Colonial Pipeline resumed fuel shipments around 5 p.m. Eastern time. It's recovering from a cyber attack that happened about a week ago, triggering shortages across the East Coast. In a further effort to provide relief, the Biden administration temporarily waived century-old shipping restrictions so foreign tankers could transport fuel to areas with shortages. Now, it's unclear how long it'll take for supplies to come back to normal, but it could take up to a week for foreign-flagged tankers to fill the supply gap. In New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Hi, Renita. Thanks. Meantime, in the Middle East, clashes continue between Israel and Gaza. President Biden has started a diplomatic push to end the violence.
I had a conversation for a while with the Prime Minister of Israel, and my hope is that we'll see this coming to conclusion sooner than later.
So far, more than 60 Palestinians have been reported killed in Gaza, along with at least 6 people in Israel.
Turning to the U.S. economy now, inflation is in focus once again. We get the producer price index for April this morning, and Bloomberg's Vinnie Dal Giudice has more.
The U.S. economy is reopening after the pandemic, and today's report will reveal the impact of rising commodity costs, including record lumber prices. Investors are on edge after the government reported April's consumer price index posted the largest increase in 12 years on broad-based gains. Bloomberg Economics points to snarls in the supply chain. Vinnie Dal Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinny, thank you. An economist predict today's producer price index will show a 0.3% gain for April. Bloomberg customers can get more on the estimates at EcoGo on the terminal.
Bitcoin is down more than 8% this morning. That's after Elon Musk said Tesla's suspending car purchases using the cryptocurrency. He cited concerns about increasing use of fossil fuels for mining Bitcoin. We get more from Bloomberg's Eric Lamb.
There's a lot of questions from the industry over the timing of this and certainly the rationale. The concerns about the environmental issues with Bitcoin, they're not new. They've been around for a long time. So there's not really a clear indicator of why Musk decided today was the time to suspend acceptance of payments.
Bloomberg's Eric Glam says Tesla might consider accepting other coins that are less energy intensive.
S&P futures down about 11 points this morning. Dow futures down 172. NASDAQ futures down 22. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
5:33 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. An NYPD officer was shot 3 times after approaching a gun-wielding man minutes after a nearby fatal shooting and crash in Brooklyn last night. The 28-year-old officer was struck in the rear of his bulletproof vest as well as in his leg and buttocks. The injured officer fired 9 shots in return, and another officer fired a dozen rounds, striking the 26-year-old suspect in the leg. Mayor Bill de Blasio hailed the officer.
This is the kind of thing that we see that gives us a clear example of how much bravery, how much courage, how much devotion it takes to be out there in the middle of the night on a street protecting everybody else.
Mayor de Blasio says the officer was rushed to Kings County Hospital in stable condition. The man suspected of shooting three people, including a young girl in Times Square last weekend, was arrested in Florida. NYPD Chief of Detectives James Essick credits investigative work and Crime Stoppers tips.
Members of the United States Marshal's Office apprehended Farrakhan Muhammad in a McDonald's parking lot in Stark, Florida, just outside of Jacksonville.
Essex says Muhammad was trying to shoot his brother after an argument and instead shot three bystanders, including a four-year-old girl. The union representing thousands of Connecticut nursing home workers poised to strike is expressing hope that contract agreements can be made before their members walk off the job tomorrow. The union says Governor Ned Lamont and the General Assembly need to find more money to address the long-standing problem of low wages in these long-term care facilities. Meanwhile, Lamont's office said earlier that he has made his, quote, last best offer to the union and management. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin potentially faces a much tougher prison sentence. The judge in Chauvin's trial ruled that there were aggravating factors present when George Floyd was murdered. The ruling would now allow Judge Peter Cahill to impose up to a 40-year sentence. Attorney General Merrick Garland told senators domestic violent extremists pose an elevated threat.
Unfortunately, the horror of domestic violent extremism is still with us. Indeed, the FBI assessed that 2019 was the deadliest year for violent domestic extremism since 1995.
Garland referenced the report drafted by the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and the National Counterterrorism Center. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Just about 5:36 on Wall Street. John Stanshauer is here at the Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
All right, Nathan. The Yankee bats still quiet, but thanks to the pitching, the Yanks won 1-0 at Tampa Bay and have now won 9 of the last 11. They're only a game out of first place. Last night, it was the ace, Gerrit Cole. 8 scoreless innings, allowed only 4 hits, struck out 12 for the 5th consecutive start. Cole did not walk a batter. He's 5-1. His ERA is 1.37. Aroldis Chapman got the save. He remains perfect in relief. Gleyber Torres did not play due to a COVID precaution. 3 Yankee coaches, 4 staff members have tested positive despite being fully vaccinated. 7th straight win for the Mets. This one was easy. 7-1 over Baltimore. Taiwan Walker's now 3-1. His ERA is 2.20. Matt Harvey took the loss and his return to Citi Field. The night after the Nets had 8 players score in double figures, they had 7 score at least 10 points. A 128-116 win in Brooklyn over San Antonio. And among the 7 was James Harden, his return from the hamstring injury. Harden played 28 minutes off the bench, 18 points, 11 assists. Kyrie Irving did not play. So the big 3 of Harden, Irving, Kevin Durant still only played together 7 times. The Spurs tonight visit the Knicks back home from the 6-game road trip. With the Rangers having shaken up the front office, firing team president John Davidson and general manager Jeff Gorton, not a surprise, coach David Quinn was fired after 3 years on the job. The Jets traded Sam Darnold to the Panthers. Sure enough, they will open the season at Carolina. The Giants week 1 host Denver in November. The Giants play 2 Monday night games on the road against the 2 previous Super Bowl winners, Tampa Bay and Kansas City. Tom Brady's return to New England will be in primetime October 3rd. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
New York City officials say a strong post-pandemic comeback is needed. They project a $12 billion deficit over the next 3 years with losses across tax sources, especially the commercial property from which it collects more than half its receipts. Revenue losses could create lasting fiscal harm. With rents still falling and empty units piling up in the market, workers are trying to score apartment bargains closer to the office for when they do return. In April, new Manhattan leases jumped 6-fold from a year earlier, according to a report by appraiser Miller Samuel and brokerage Douglas Elliman Real Estate. Well, the gasoline panic that plagued the U.S. South for days is spreading to states like New Jersey. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says fuel supplies are sufficient, but warns that could change if the effects from the hack of a major fuel pipeline continue. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Ed, thanks. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that the Boeing 737 MAX is nearing a return to the skies with a plan for electrical repairs.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Gasoline prices hit $3 as shortages grow on the East Coast.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on David Cameron testifying to MPs about his lobbying on behalf of Greensill Capital.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting regulators have launched a new probe in the fatal crash involving a Tesla in California earlier this month.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're watching centers on the vaccination effort. President Biden's announced some welcome news for parents, teachers, and teens. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
12 to 15-year-olds can find places to be vaccinated today. President Joe Biden says things are ready to go and spells very good news.
Because of them, nearly 17 million more Americans are eligible to get vaccinated. And now, I encourage each of them and their parents to get their vaccination shots right away.
Biden says pharmacies and healthcare providers should be ready to go. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. Google co-founder Sergey Brin sold $163 million in shares in recent days. It's the first time he's gotten rid of stock in more than 4 years. Brin and fellow founder Larry Page stepped away from Google parent Alphabet in 2019, but they remain majority stakeholders. And the judge overseeing the high-stakes trial between Apple and Epic Games is hinting at a compromise. The idea? Let app developers inform their users that the iPhone maker's virtual store isn't their only shopping option. It could quell at least some of the concerns of Fortnite maker Epic. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, partly to mostly sunny, upper 60s today. We'll get into the low 70s tomorrow and Saturday under a mix of sun and clouds. Currently 53 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by SEI. Crises bring out the best in people. Character, community, partnership, together as one. SEI. Go to SEIC.com/IMS. And futures are falling, with S&P futures down 12 points, Dow futures down 174, NASDAQ futures down 27. 10-year Treasury, that'll change. Yield 1.69%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. And NYMEX crude oil down 2.5% on $1.68 at $64.40 a barrel. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Colonial Pipeline says it initiated the restart of operations, but it will take several days for fuel deliveries to return to normal. The company was hit by a ransomware attack last Friday, snarling gas supplies in the east. A spokesman for the UN Secretary General says Antonio Guterres was saddened by the fighting between Israel and the Palestinians. Meanwhile, President Biden says he has spoken with Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu. In Major League Baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets down the Orioles. The A's beat the Red Sox. The Nationals lost. In the NBA, the Nets won. The Wizards lost. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael. Thanks. It's 5:48 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Let's talk politics now, as President Biden faces a number of challenges on infrastructure, vaccines, and now the Middle East, and as Republicans grapple over the direction they want to take their party heading into next year's midterms. We're joined now by Professor Wendy Schiller, chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. Professor Schiller, it is great to have you back with us this morning. And I want to start, if I can, with what's been happening in the GOP. Of course, we've been following this inter-party debate ever since January, really. But it does seem like it kind of came to a head yesterday with Liz Cheney getting ousted from leadership. Where do you see the fight going from here in the Republican Party?
Good morning, Nathan. I think this is really interesting. The question is, does it spill over really considerably to the Senate? The House GOP seems to be all in, and of course, they're all up for re-election in 2022, and primaries are scheduled differently in every state, but, you know, it's not that long away. We think it's a really far amount of time away, but it's not, and they're really worried about getting primaried by somebody supported by Trump or somebody who supports the president either way. So that's, you know, sort of what happened to Liz Cheney. And it's really weird given the dominance of the Cheney brand of Republican conservatism that was with us for, you know, the entire Bush presidency and afterwards. So it's a startling wake-up call, I think, to whoever's left that calls themselves an establishment Republican, because there just isn't a lot of room left in the party for that kind of viewpoint.
Do you think Liz Cheney is going to be left? There's challenges threatened, at least, for her one district in Wyoming. Does she hold on to her seat?
You know, we don't know. Like I said, it's a long way off. We have to see what happens in the primary. I mean, the Cheney name used to be really quite strong, as we know, in Wyoming. So we have to wait and see, really, when push comes to shove. You know, a year from now, the country's going to be coming really, hopefully, way out of the pandemic. And, you know, sort of the hysteria about lots of things associated with the election might or might not die down. So, you know, whether that family name holds in Wyoming, we have to see. I think she's got a future nonetheless, right? I don't think that Cheney's going anywhere. But what's interesting is the Senate Republicans have been pretty quiet about this fight, right? They have their own sort of Trumpers, obviously, Trump supporters, Lindsey Graham among them, Ted Cruz in the Senate. But the Republican Party as a whole in the Senate has been so quiet about this. And that's because they really have to win some states that Biden won in 2020. So I think that's the big question mark. Does this really become the national brand of the Republicans, which did not do well with suburban voters in 2018 and 2020, or does it limit itself to the most sort of really conservative House districts? And we just don't know, you know, what's going to happen there yet.
Does this party fight within the GOP have any impact on a unified message for them as they try to position themselves as an opposition party in policy terms when we're dealing with this debate over trillions of dollars in infrastructure spending?
Well, Nathan, this is what happens to the Republicans. They will block things like Obamacare or the stimulus package under President Obama, or they'll shut down the government in 2013, and they'll win the Senate back in 2014, right? We've seen this with even going back to Bill Clinton in 93 on his budget bill, right? And then in 94, they take both the House and the Senate back electorally. They're very good at turning the page. They're very good at re-messaging. So they'll take the advantages of a better economy and vaccination and infrastructure spending by the Democrats, which will help their districts too. And then they'll find another issue, which they think is the Achilles heel of the Democrats, and they'll run on that in September, October, November of 2022. That's the real fear for the Democrats, because they don't ever really, the Democrat Party can't message well enough to claim credit for all these things and deny the Republicans credit for things that will go to those districts anyway. That's the big ticket with infrastructure. So they don't really have to vote for it because the Democrats will get it through. And people in their districts will still get their bridges repaired and their roads repaired. And, of course, the earned income tax credit expansion for child care. And that's the problem for the Democratic Party. You know, what do you deny? How do you figure out a way to do that? And they haven't figured it out yet, at least in the last 20 years. So I don't think it costs them anything, actually.
Only about 30 seconds left here, but it's really interesting that you bring that up, because we have seen some criticism from Democrats of Republicans sort of taking credit for infrastructure spending and that sort of thing. You don't think that kind of criticism from Democrats has any impact?
It only really has impact, I think we've seen over the last 20 years, when it fails. If the Democrats actually fail to do it, if the Republicans actually block the Democrats from doing something that they can argue would be really significant in helping people get a better life, then they can argue about it. But then they're in charge of the government and they look like they failed. So it's a terrible catch-22 for the Democrats. I don't have a solution this morning, but it's certainly something that they're aware of. They're advertising now, actually, trying to claim credit already for the vaccination and the better economy. So that's we'll have to wait and see if they continue to be able to try to do that. But it's a tough challenge for them.
Thank you, as always, for joining us. Wendy Schiller, professor and chair of political science at Brown University. Karen.
Nathan, it is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Today, we're looking at how Texas is poised to join Georgia and Florida with measures that critics say suppress minority voting. The Supreme Court's Watershed 2013 Shelby County ruling created the path for many of these election changes by GOP-controlled legislatures, and a pending decision could have just as much impact. For more, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to election law expert Rick Hassan, a professor at the University of California at Irvine Law School.
There is a cascade of voting changes in Republican-controlled states. Which state's bill stands out as the most restrictive, and why?
I think it's a moving target. We're still waiting to see what legislation is going to pass in Texas. And Texas had some pretty worrisome provisions. But you saw in Florida, in Georgia, in Arizona, in each of these states, laws that make it somewhat harder for people to register and to vote. In addition, and what I think is probably more concerning than even things like saying you can't give voters water while they're waiting in line to vote, are provisions that might allow partisans to manipulate how the votes are actually going to be counted. So in Georgia, the Secretary of State, who you may remember, Brad Raffensperger, stood up to Trump and would not find or manufacture additional votes to try to flip the outcome. The Secretary of State position has been taken out of a role on the state election board to be replaced by someone who's going to be appointed by the legislature. And this body now has the power to take over up to four county election boards at a time. And so it could be that we'll see the state election board looking to take over Democratic counties and mess with how the election is being conducted in those counties. So this is a kind of a new problem that we haven't seen before, not just about making it harder to vote, but potentially subverting the outcome of the election itself.
As far as the parts of these bills that go further than talking about how a person votes in that state, will those survive court challenges?
So how things are going to go in the court is uncertain. There are really three main lines of attack. One is an attack under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. The second is an attack under various constitutional provisions, including the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. And the third are attacks under state constitutions. How much does Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act protect the laws that make it harder for people to register and vote? That is an open question that is before the United States Supreme Court right now. This is a case coming out of Arizona where the Democratic Party challenged some rules that they said made it harder for voters to be able to cast their ballots. And the Supreme Court is going to, for the first time, weigh in on how Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which provides that minority voters should have the same opportunity as others to participate in the political process, how Section 2 is going to apply in this context. This major issue should be decided by the end of June, and that will tell us how well these new challenges will go under Section 2.
And that's Rick Hassan of the University of California at Irvine Law School speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. Attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. Futures are lower this morning. S&P futures down about 13 points. And still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, a check on the business headlines and all the news you need to start your day. This is Bloomberg.